using sign language in it, but neither of us speak sign language, so we asked the computer to translate it for us. Unfortunately, I think the computer got something wrong, though at the time we didn't realize it. We assumed the computer was right, and that we just didn't understand what Dr. Holtz meant, or that he had space madness or something. "What did he say?" Nina asked. "That he was being murdered, and that Earth had killed him." When everyone looked at me quizzically, I said, "That's the part the computer screwed up. I have the footage right here." Despite the fact that I'd been smacked around by a giant robot arm, my spacesuit had protected my watch well, not to mention myself, so it was in much better shape than Dr. Holtz's phone had been. I touched it to the computer in front of Chang, transmitting the video file, which popped up on the screen. "You can still speak sign language, can't you, Mom?" "Oh," Mom said, "I could never speak it fluently, Dash. I only tried to learn it to communicate with my grandfather when he was sick." "But you know some, right?" I pressed. "I suppose," Mom said. "It's been a long time, though."
"Well, try," Nina ordered.
I scanned through the footage until I got to Dr. Holt signing inside the airlock. "Here," I said. "This is where he says he was being murdered." We all watched as he pointed beneath his open hand.
"That's the sign for murder, all right," Mom said.
Dr. Holtz began to make the quick series of movements with his hands. "This is where I think the computer got it wrong," I told her, "where it translated, 'Earth killed me.'" Mom watched and nodded. Then she paused the footage. "You're right," she said. "That's not the sign for Earth. He's making letter signs."
"You mean he's spelling?" Dad asked.
"Yes," Mom said. "In American Sign Language, there isn't a sign for every name. Instead, you spell them out, letter by letter."
"Then why did the computer say Earth?" Kira asked.
"It must have thought Dr. Holtz was spelling Earth," Mom suggested, "and it simply interpreted that as a name. So it said, 'Earth killed me,' in the same way it would have said, 'Jim killed me.' Only Dr. Holtz was probably spelling something else and the computer misread it."
"So what was he spelling instead?" Chang asked.
"Let's see." Mom scrolled the footage backward to the point where Dr. Holtz began spelling. The first thing he did was raise his hand with a finger pointing to the side. "Oh my," Mom said, the color drained from her face.
"That wasn't an E, was it?" I asked.
"No." Mom still seemed to be in shock.
"Was it a G?"
Everyone looked to me, surprised, then to Mom for confirmation. She nodded. "Dr. Holtz wasn't spelling Earth. He was spelling Garth." Everyone in the room reacted at once. I saw astonishment, disbelief, and betrayal. "Mr. Grissom?" Kira asked, shocked. "He's a spy for the military?"
"I guess, if that's what Dr. Holtz thought," I said. "Whoever he works for definitely has some power over NASA. Dr. Marquez told me Mr. Grissom was the only person here who didn't have to sit with him every week."
"Computer," Nina demanded, "where is Garth Grissom right now?"
"Dismantling the main airlock," the computer replied calmly. Everyone gasped in alarm. Nina was the first to race out the door. The rest of us were right behind her.
"Stop right there," Mr. Grissom ordered.
As the computer had said, he was standing by the main airlock. The control panel had been ripped off and wires dangled out of it. Mr. Grissom was wearing a full spacesuit, helmet and all. He no longer looked like the reserved, meek man we knew. That had all been an act. The real Garth Grissom was a daunting presence with a cold look in his eye and a commanding voice.
He warned, "If anyone comes a step closer, I'll open both doors at once and depressurize the whole moon base."
"That's not possible," Nina said.
"It is now," Mr. Grissom told her. "I overrode the safety protocols, although I won't do anything unless you force me to."
He placed a thumb on the keypad and shook his head sadly.
"I was really hoping things wouldn't come to this."
It was 20 feet to the airlock from where we all stood. There was nothing but open space in between us. There was no way to get ahead of Mr. Grissom. Nina raised her hand, signaling him to calm down as she edged closer to him.
"Take it easy."
"Stop," Mr. Grissom ordered. "I'm not bluffing."
Nina froze where she was. I noticed Zan Perfonic wasn't with us anymore. I had no idea how long she'd been gone or how much she'd witnessed in the control room. I could only hope that she was circling around to get the jump on Mr. Grissom somehow.
"What do you want from us?"
Dad asked.
"Your cooperation," Mr. Grissom replied. "Unfortunately, you have all become privy to information that should have remained secret, and I am prepared to take drastic measures to make sure it goes no farther than this spot."
"Are you crazy?" Chang asked.
"If you open that airlock, you won't just kill us, you'll kill everyone else here."
"Desperate times call for desperate measures," Mr. Grissom said calmly.
There are forces at work here you don't understand.
Then explain them to us, Mom pleaded. Why is it so important that no one learn that there has been alien contact?
That's not the case, Mr. Grissom informed us. The right people can know about it. In fact, they should know about it. Dr. Holtz wouldn't listen to reason, though. He wanted to tell everyone. He wanted the whole world to know, and I knew I couldn't trust him to keep his mouth shut.
Why can't the whole world know? I asked.
Grover's Mill, Mr. Grissom said. Oh, come on, Chang groaned. You can't be serious.
What's Grover's Mill? Kira asked. Chang started to explain, but Mr. Grissom beat him to it.
On October 30th, 1938, an actor named Orson Welles did a radio broadcast in which he reported that Martians had landed in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Although Welles warned people before the broadcast that it was merely for entertainment, people who tuned in during the middle believed it, and they were terrified. There was a massive panic.
Because in the story, the Martians were attacking Earth, Nina argued.
And they were imaginary, Mr. Grissom shot back. Now think what would happen if the citizens of the world learned that real aliens were coming. The public is primed to think that any aliens are dangerous. Even if you tell them this new race you've found comes in peace, they won't believe it. Frankly, I don't believe it. So that's what this is about, Chang exclaimed. This isn't about real people at all. It's about you and all your fellow psychopaths at the Pentagon. You're the ones who are afraid.
Mr. Grissom's brow furrowed in anger.
You think that's foolish? You think an alien race is really going to come halfway across the galaxy just to make friends? That's not how the universe works, pal. The Europeans didn't sail across the ocean 6 centuries ago to make nice with the Native Americans. They wiped them out and stole everything they had. And there's no reason to believe that another race would do any different.
Of course there is, Chang protested. Just because humans are evil doesn't mean the rest of the galaxy is, too.
Fine, Mr. Grissom said dismissively. You can go right on believing life's just like E.T. When the aliens come, we'll all link arms and sing Kumbaya together. But my job is to be prepared for the alternative. Any life from another planet is most likely hostile, and any contact they make with us, no matter how friendly it seems, is most likely a ruse to learn our weaknesses.
Whoa, Chang gasped. Is everyone at the Pentagon such a paranoid whack job, or are you just special?
Mom squeezed Chang's arm and said under her breath, Don't taunt him. Mr. Grissom was shaking his head, sneering at Chang with disgust.
Dr. Holtz was just like you, a naive optimist, thinking his alien contact couldn't possibly be dangerous, so much that he was willing to give up his life for it. I gave that fool options. He could have turned over the alien to me, let me talk to them, and get a sense of their intentions. But rather than do that, he chose to force my hand.
So you threatened his family back on Earth? Dad asked. Told him you'd have them killed if he didn't go out the airlock?
I wouldn't necessarily have had them killed, Mr. Grissom said.
But you still threaten them, right? Mom demanded. Because that's what you do, isn't it? Threaten those who are weaker than you. You sent that text to Dashiell, didn't you?
It was for his own good, Mr. Grissom argued. It was all for your own good. If your son had backed off and kept his nose out of this, none of us would be in this position right now.
This isn't Dashiell's fault, Mom cried.
You're the one who's threatening our lives. You're the one responsible for Dr. Holtz's death. And you have the gall to accuse the aliens of being monsters? They couldn't possibly be any worse than you. I did what I had to, Mr. Grissom shouted. While you're all up here playing with moon rocks, I'm trying to prevent riots on Earth and make sure we're prepared for alien invasions. Yes, I took out Dr. Holtz to ensure the safety of billions of other people, and if you're not prepared to cooperate, I'll happily do the same to you.
Hey!
Lars Sjoberg suddenly appeared on the catwalk, wearing his robe, slippers, and a furious expression.
What's with all the shouting? I'm trying to get back to sleep.
Startled, Mr. Grissom turned to him, taking his eyes off the rest of us for a moment. Chang leaped into action. He launched himself at Mr. Grissom, soaring across the 20 feet between them quickly in the low gravity. Mr. Grissom spun for the controls to the airlock, but Chang slammed into him, knocking him off his feet. Mr. Grissom fought back, headbutting Chang with his helmet so hard that Chang tumbled off him. But by that point, Dad and Nina had rushed to help as well. Together with Chang, they overpowered Mr. Grissom, flipping him onto his stomach and wrenching his arms behind him.
"Garth Grissom," Nina said, "you are hereby under arrest for the murder of Dr. Ronald Holtz, as well as the attempted murders of Dashiell Gibson and Kira Howard, sabotage, blackmail, and destruction of federal property."
"You don't know what you're doing," Mr. Grissom snarled.
Nina continued,
"you will be handcuffed and placed under lock and key in the medical bay until tomorrow, after which you will be returned to Earth under guard on the Raptor and turned over to the proper authorities there.
Mr. Grissom shouted something about the Pentagon having his back and that he wouldn't stay under lock and key for long, but I didn't hear all of it because Mom pulled me aside.
"You were right about Dr. Holtz," she told me. "He was sane, after all. While Mr. Grissom was apparently the one we should have been worried about. I'm sorry we doubted you. I'm sure that wherever he is, Ronald is thankful for what you've done for him."
"What about the aliens?" I asked. "What happens to Dr. Holtz's discovery?" Mom lowered her eyes sadly.
"I don't know. Dr. Holtz was the only one who'd had contact. Now that he's gone, there's no proof they exist at all."
"Rose!" Nina called. "There are handcuffs in the top left desk drawer in my room. Could you get them?"
"All right."
Mom broke away from me and raced up to Nina's quarters. Everyone else was gathered around the airlock. Dad and Nina were pinning Mr. Grissom down while he writhed angrily and told us what fools we all were. Chang was inspecting the airlock to see if he could figure out what Mr. Grissom had done to it. Lars Sjoberg was shouting at Nina, upset that Mr. Grissom would take the precious return seat on the rocket that one of his family members wanted. Kira and her father were off to the side, quietly watching it all. The other Moonies were pouring back out of their quarters, defying Nina's orders, to see what all the commotion was about. I thought about what my mother had just said to me, about Dr. Holtz's proof being gone. It seemed so wrong. Perhaps he'd left some more evidence on his phone, but if he had, it was probably destroyed, which meant it would all remain a mystery until the aliens ever chose to make contact again. And then, suddenly, understanding dawned on me, a realization so powerful I had to lean against the wall to steady myself. Then I walked around the corner, leaving the chaos behind, looking for some privacy. The mess hall was on my left, the greenhouse on my right. As a kid, I wasn't supposed to enter the greenhouse, but I went in anyhow. The greenhouse wasn't working out nearly as well as we'd hoped. Growing food on the moon was a big priority, but it had proved much harder than expected, and the plants were barely surviving. The brochures for MBA had displayed artists' renderings of a greenhouse so thick with plant growth it was practically a rainforest. In real life, the greenhouse looked more like the Great Plains after a drought. All around me, straggly bits of greenery struggled to survive. I sat down, looking away from the door. I focused on a few pathetic tomato plants that had yet to produce a single fruit.
"Hello, Dashiell."
I turned around. Zan Perfonic was standing behind me. I hadn't heard her come in, but then I hadn't expected to. She seemed to read my thoughts.
"You were hoping to talk to me?"
"Yes," I said.
"Tell me,
what planet are you from?"
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. One last note. Thanks for taking the time to read this guide to your new home in its entirety. Hopefully you found it useful and informative. Now it's time to start your great adventure as one of the first humans ever to live on a celestial body other than Earth. Although there will be a great deal of work ahead, or school if you're a child at MBA, we at NASA would like to take this opportunity to remind you to enjoy yourself. We've taken great pains to make the base just as comfortable as your home on Earth, if not more comfortable. So have fun up there. Make friends with your fellow lunar nuts, if you haven't already. Be part of the community. Organize events. Start a book club, or an amateur theater group, or a low-gravity square dancing society. Remember, Moonbase Alpha is going to be your home for a long time. The more you get involved, the better it will be. Have a great trip. And remember, the world is watching you.
Chapter 21. Mind-blowing discovery. Lunar Day 190. Morning.
"How long have you known I'm an alien?" Zan asked.
"Not very long," I admitted. "In fact, I wasn't completely sure until right now."
Zan smiled, and her big blue eyes sparkled.
It now occurred to me why I had never seen any eyes like hers before. They weren't human.
"My planet isn't that far in galactic terms," she told me. "It's only about 10 light-years away. You humans call it SG-61109B. We call it something that can't be pronounced in your language. So Dr. Holtz and I just called it Bosco."
"Bosco?" I repeated.
Zan shrugged. "Dr. Holtz said it was better than SG-61109B.
"Good point."
Above us, the greenhouse roof had a large skylight in it.
It had been one of the most expensive parts of MBA to transport and install, but it was necessary for the plants to have sunlight. I looked up and saw the earth above us, along with several thousand stars. "Where's Bosco?" I asked. Zan pointed northward. "That way, in the constellation Draco." I looked back at her. There were a thousand questions in my head, all vying to be asked at once. Finally, I went with, "I'm the only one who can see you, right?" Zan's eyes sparkled again. "You figured that out?" "The only time you've ever spoken to me is when we were alone," I explained. "I've seen you near other people, but I just realized I've never seen you speak to any of them, or interact with them. The only person you've done any of that with is me. And the other day, when Kira overheard us talking in my room, she could only hear me, not you." "Dr. Holtz was right about you," Zan said. "You're a smart kid." "He was talking to you that night in the bathroom, wasn't he? But the cameras couldn't see you, so it looked like he was talking to himself." "Yes. I probably shouldn't have approached him there, but it seemed private at the time. I didn't realize you were there. I asked you before if you were talking to him then, and you lied to me." "Technically, I didn't," Zan told me. "You asked if I was on the phone with him that night, and I said that I wasn't." I frowned, realizing she was right. "Well, you misled me about that and a whole lot of other things." "I didn't think you were ready for the truth." "I wasn't the only one who overheard Dr. Holt speaking to you. My mom did too, and some other people here, but they all thought Dr. Holtz was talking to himself, going crazy." Zan nodded. "Dr. Holtz knew that it happened. It was one of the reasons he wanted to reveal my existence. He didn't think we could keep this all a secret much longer." Outside the greenhouse, across the hall, I could hear Garth Grissom being locked inside the medical bay. He was yelling the whole time, telling Dr. Jenke and Chang they were fools for not seeing things his way.
"When the aliens attack and we're not prepared for it, you won't be so pleased with yourselves," he warned.
Then the door slammed, silencing him.
"What a nut job," Chang sighed.
I stared at Zan. She didn't seem remotely evil. In fact, I got a feeling from her that I couldn't explain, a sense that she was nothing but goodness, warmth, and light. And yet, somewhere in the back of my mind, I found myself wondering if this could all be a trick, as Mr. Grissom had warned. "So, how do you do it?" I asked. "How do you make yourself invisible to everyone but one person?" "Because I'm not really here," Zan said, like it was the most obvious thing in the world. Only it wasn't obvious to me at all.
"What do you mean?"
"Your friend Roddy was right the other day about how difficult space travel is. Our civilization is far more advanced than yours, and even we haven't figured out how to go from planet to planet in less than a generation. However, contrary to what your scientists tell you, there is one thing that can go faster than the speed of light. Much faster, in fact. Thoughts." I'd been kind of proud of myself for figuring out who'd killed Dr. Holtz and what Zan's secret was, but this revelation caught me completely by surprise.
"So, you just think yourself here?"
"In a sense. It's not quite as simple as that. In fact, the process is quite complicated. But yes, that's the general idea."
"If you're only a thought, how can I see you? Or hear you?"
"Because thoughts are extremely powerful, if you know how to use them right. Has there ever been a time when you knew what someone was thinking without saying anything?"
"I guess."
"It's kind of like that. I'm communicating directly with your brain, and since your brain controls what you see and hear, I can let you see and hear me. Or at least I can let you see and hear a representation of myself that isn't alarming to you."
"You mean you don't look like a human?"
Zan smiled again.
"Not at all. I've merely tried to model the image I project to be as human as possible. Do you like it?"
I stared at her amazing blue eyes.
"Yes, though I don't think you got the eyes quite right. You made them too good somehow." "I couldn't help it. Dr. Holtz told me something once, that you humans consider the eyes a window to the soul."
The greenhouse was right across from the mess hall. I could hear Kira and her father in there. Dr. Howard was saying, "Promise me you'll never go out on the surface without permission, or do anything risky like that ever again. I don't know what I'd do if I lost you."
"Trust me, Dad," Kira said. "I've had enough excitement to last me a long time."
I returned my attention to Zan.
As amazing as her revelations were, I found them surprisingly calming as well. Many strange things from the last few days suddenly made sense, like why Zan had never opened a door or touched me, or touched anything for that matter, or why she had looked so alarmed when I approached her in the mess hall when other people were around. It was because she wasn't really there. Every time I'd seen her, whether she was with other people or hanging out by herself, she had merely been pretending to exist physically. "How long were you in contact with Dr. Holtz?" I asked. "Only a few weeks, but my kind have been watching you humans on Earth for quite some time now. I suppose you could say we've been thinking ourselves there without choosing to interact with any of you." "For how long?" "We first became aware of humanity about 100 of your years ago, when you started detonating nuclear bombs. Such violent activity has effects your kind hasn't figured out yet. In a sense, it sends ripples through the fabric of space-time. When we realized that you existed and what you had done, we deduced where you were and sent out our first explorers." "You've been coming for 100 years? I asked, startled. "And you've never been in touch with any humans that whole time?" "No," Zan said. "We have decided to be very cautious about this. Besides, much can be learned about a species through observation."
I heard Lars Sjoberg storm past the greenhouse. He was chastising Nina.
"You promised us all space on that rocket home." "That was before I had a murderer to get rid of," Nina replied. "Trust me, Lars, I'd love to send you back on the same rocket with him. Even better, I'd like to put the two of you on a rocket together and send it off into deep space for the rest of eternity. But NASA's saying no, so for the time being, I'm stuck here with you and your horrible family."
I waited until they were out of earshot before speaking again.
"So why did you decide to make yourself known after all this time?"
"Because of this base. You humans are making a sincere attempt to colonize planets beyond your own. You're a long way from getting out of your own solar system, but it's a step, which means that someday down the line you might be coming our way. So we decided that a connection should be made. After a great amount of deliberation, Dr. Holtz was selected. I have to admit, given how many of your movies are about evil aliens attacking your planet, I thought Dr. Holtz might be frightened at first. I was pleasantly surprised by how thrilled he was to make contact. And then when he kept pressing me to let him reveal our existence, well, his enthusiasm was contagious. He was very convincing." Zan lowered her eyes sadly. "I had no idea it would end so tragically. Sadly, I wasn't aware it was even happening."
"Why not?"
"I can't be here constantly. That requires tremendous thought and focus. On my own planet, I need to sleep and do other things. So I was busy when Mr. Grissom got to Dr. Holtz. When I returned, his death was as big a shock to me as it was to you."
"So that's why you came to me," I said, "to try to find out what happened to Dr. Holtz?"
"Yes, it was a serious breach of protocol, but I feared there was no other way to find out. I wanted to know the truth, but no one else here seemed willing to investigate the death, except you. So I figured you might need a little push."
I now heard Roddy entering the mess with his brother.
"I suspected it was Mr. Grissom all along," Roddy boasted. "I never trusted that guy. He always seemed shiftier than a Neptunian blork beast."
"Roddy," Cesar said, "unless you want that new girl to think you're the biggest dork in the universe, you have to stop saying things like that."
I returned my attention to Zan, putting all the pieces from the last few days together. "You also picked me because I was a kid, didn't you? An adult would have known there was no Zan Perfonix scheduled to come here. They wouldn't have followed your orders so blindly."
"Maybe not," Zan said, "but I saw other reasons to choose you as well. Your intelligence, for one. In fact, you proved to be much smarter than I expected. I didn't think you'd figure out what I really was. I originally planned to learn what happened to Dr. Holtz, then pretend to return on the rocket today and disappear from your life forever."
"So you lied to me. About pretty much everything. Your job, why you wanted my help, what you really are." "I apologize for that. I didn't know what else to do. Just because I'm highly evolved doesn't mean I'm perfect." Zan fixed her brilliant blue eyes on me. "Although, now that you have figured out what I am, you seem as qualified a human contact as Dr. Holtz was. Perhaps even better." I was so startled by this, I actually forgot to breathe for a moment. Finally, I gasped, "Really?"
"Yes. Approaching a human subject is no easy task. Not everyone would handle it as well as you have.
I suspect most would, as you humans often say, freak out. Therefore, I would very much like to continue our discussions. Although, sadly, I think that given the events of the past few days, we must keep our contact a secret. Humanity doesn't seem to be ready for this yet. I'm sure Mr. Grissom's reaction wasn't a normal one, I began. Even so, Zan told me, I wouldn't want anything to happen to you. So what do you say? Are you willing to continue human-extraterrestrial contact? Of course, I wanted to shout. I couldn't believe Zan was asking me. I was so thrilled by the idea I could barely contain myself. And yet, I did. I stayed so calm I surprised myself. I'm not sure. For the first time, Zan looked surprised. Why not? Outside, I could now hear my own family in the halls calling to me. Violet was back with my parents. I'd been in such a hurry to talk to Zan, I'd forgotten to tell them where I was going. Since I'd almost been killed less than an hour before, my parents sounded a bit worried. Violet didn't. She was acting like it was a big game of hide-and-seek, singing, "Dashiell, come out, wherever you are." I was going to have to show myself to them soon. "I can't do it because of them," I said quietly. "Dr. Holtz lived on his own up here. I don't. It's going to be very hard to keep you a secret from my family. Sooner or later they're going to catch me talking to myself and think I've cracked up." "We'll take precautions," Zan told me. "This would mean a great deal to my planet as well as yours. In fact, it is more important than you could possibly understand." I looked up through the skylight at Earth once again. It suddenly occurred to me that, for the first time in months, I wasn't longing to be back on my home planet. My anger at being stuck on the moon had vanished, but it wasn't only because of Zan's offer. I also had a new friend in Kira, and I'd finally stopped grousing about having nothing to do at Moonbase Alpha and started actually doing things there. Although making alien contact was kind of a big deal. "All right," I said, "I'll do it. With one condition." Zan beamed, her eyes brighter blue than ever. "Of course. What is it?" "The way you travel between planets, is that something only your species can do?" "I'm not sure," Zan admitted. "I suppose others could do it, although it isn't easy." "I'd like to try. Will you teach me?" Zan stared up through the skylight thoughtfully. For a moment it seemed that she was no longer with me. I could still see her body, but her mind appeared to be light years away. I got the sense she was communicating with someone back on her home planet. Her eyes were eerily vacant, the sun and earth and a million stars reflected in them. Then, suddenly, she was back. The life returned to her eyes. She looked at me and smiled.
Space Case was written by Stuart Gibbs and read by Gibson Frazier. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. The mix engineer was Mike DeCina. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Space Case is available in print from Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers. Also by Stuart Gibbs from Simon & Schuster Audio, Poached, read by Gibson Frazier.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.